Welcome to Pyramid to Circles. This podcast is for the leaders and for the change makers who have the goal of evolving their company, their department, their team towards more collective intelligence, more empowerment, more self-organization, but who are asking themselves how to make this happen, where to start, and how to get inspiration from others. Today, my friend, I would like to explore a question that many have. And that question is, do I have a life purpose and how to find it? Many of you may have this question. And there's another question that many managers have. What is my organization's purpose and how to find it? And we all know that Frederic Laloux puts purpose as one of the pillars of what he calls a leading organization. And methods such as Holacracy invite organizations to become more purpose-centric. We even have in France a law that passed 2 years ago to invite companies to clearly define their purpose in their status. And today, more than 100 organizations in France, many great companies, are officially declared as purpose-centric. So it must mean something, right? So let's explore this question. And today, for that, I have the pleasure to receive a guest who is investing his life and career in it. He has invested many years in deploying Holacracy in organizations. And he's the author, by the way, of a book called Getting Started with Holacracy. And from his experience with Holacracy, he specialized on the specific topic that of purpose with the method called True Purpose. And he brings it to organizations. And he sees his mission as to spark the fire of purpose in leaders and organizations who feel called to change the world. And my guest is Marco Buggers. Marco, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
How are you? Where are you as we speak?
I'm in Amsterdam, in a very windy Amsterdam.
In a very windy Amsterdam. All right. Yeah. Look, I introduced you very quickly. I just want to add one thing and you correct me or complete. You say today you're a coach and a consultant, a coach. Mm-hmm. You define you like that. Before that, you had different leadership positions in big companies, in Canon, in Orange. There are many people from Orange, France Telecom at the time, in the Netherlands. But many people from this company, as I know, are listening to us. And today, your job is to support leaders and organizations on their self-management and self-organization journey. Mm-hmm. And you work with companies in many sectors, from large companies, governments, startups, in different countries.
That's correct.
So maybe you want to add something to this short introduction.
So, you already said it all, basically. I started off years ago. Actually, my last corporate job was working in Orange in the Netherlands. And that was for the internet provider Wannado. It was a fabulous experience. I learned a lot, but I also learned a lot about how I wanted to improve things. Since that time, I've been self-employed, but I still draw a lot of inspiration from that time that I worked there. Actually, part of my book is also based on the experience I had in that company.
Mm. Okay, we say hi to those who are listening to us from Orange tonight. So mm-hmm. I want to ask you, of course, a question to start, and maybe you're expecting it, but okay, what is, Marco, your purpose? How would you define it? Of course, I have to ask you this question, you know?
Now, well, before I answer the question, I thought a long time before I discovered my purpose. So what is a purpose? And there are people who say you cannot even define it in words. But then I thought, well, actually, having words for it is actually a way to reflect on it. But it doesn't mean that it's actually the thing. You know, words are a reflection of your life's purpose. But it's good to have something to reflect on it. Now, having said that, putting it in words, my purpose is to ignite a healing fire in leaders. And I dare to say it like to you like that. I'm not going to say that like, you know, always when I have my business outside contacts. But for me, it's fixed. It speaks very clearly. It's like what I do is telling stories. What I do is, and I'm doing that actually my whole life. I'm telling stories. I'm trying to talk about meaning. I'm trying to talk about purpose, and I cannot actually not do that. And I find that doing that has been also having impact within companies. When I'm training, when I'm facilitating a workshop, I'm always doing that. I cannot stop doing it. I don't know if that's clear.
I hear very well. I love it. Ignite a healing fire in leaders. Maybe tell us a bit how you do that. How do you do you ignite it?
Yeah. It's still a bit of a mystery myself sometimes, but actually I have a number of steps. So it's technically, it's just part of my purpose. There are also other parts of my purpose, like essence, like mission, like message. But this is what I would call the impact that I'm having. And I do that in a number of ways. And what I do with my customers, and also what I did with myself, is finding out exactly what is the process that I use. And actually, I found the process.
You found it, okay.
You want to hear it?
I'd love to. And I think we all want to hear it because it's a big question. I'd like to ask you, there are many questions I want to ask after, but around purpose. But maybe if you have a process, just jump into it. Let's be practical. How we find it.
Okay. So the process is as follows. First of all, I show people I care. And I do that automatically. I do that by listening. I do that by telling a story. I do that by actually sharing an experience that is common. Then my second step is actually I show them, I lend them, and it's a bit of a poetic language. Huh? I lend them my heavenly eyes, which actually means I show them what heaven looks like. So I show them what would actually be possible if they start to find their purpose. Then I take their hand and we start in a process. And actually every workshop, every interaction, I sort of, you know, do these steps. So then the learning starts. They start to discover themselves. And after that, we go on a journey and they arrive in a place where they actually are enthused by the landscape that they discovered. And after that, they go on by themselves. They continue their own journey and we share the joy. So, and for me, it speaks very clearly because actually, that's my workshop design.
I understand. So maybe we unpack it a little bit step by step. Mm-hmm. I understand you show care and listen, everyone, this is something you can do. Maybe I don't know if you can do it with your team, so your colleagues, but just maybe it's something you can get inspired from to help others find their purpose, just to be a presence that is a presence of possibility for people to find more their own truth. So maybe let's hear you and understand that how we can enable that in others. I think that's a great idea. You say you start by sharing care and by you share experiences. So you create a context of a connection. That's what I understand. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, there are actually two. So this is my process. That's what I discovered for myself. That's my unique process. There's another process, which is called the true purpose process, uh-huh. which is the process, which the steps which I use, which is all the true purpose coaches are using it. But as part of the thing that I'm doing all the time, I also make my own process. And those two overlap.
Okay. So with true process or with your process, there is this idea of creating connection, like a space of connection, of safety.
Yeah.
And then you say I show what would be possible if they would find their purpose. Can you just unpack this a little bit? What does it mean to how you do that? I guess you make people connect to how it feels to find your purpose. Is it what you do?
Actually, yes. What I do, I tell my experience. I tell my stories.
You tell your story, yeah.
And I let people tell their stories. So we get in this space of connection. And what I sometimes start with, like, going into moments where they actually were in a flow and where they were actually having an experience,
yeah,
that they were on a higher conscious level or doing something they really enjoy.
Mm.
And those are, we all have those. So I'm not saying, you know, purpose is nothing new. It's just we all experience these moments of flow, these moments of intense purpose. So what I do in this step is actually showing them and discovering that and actually unearthing these experiences. And to that, and for that, I am lending them my eye. So in that sense, I'm lending them my experience, and I show them examples of companies who have done that.
So you're saying that we can find our purpose when we start to look at or contemplate in our life moments, certain moments that kind of speak about it. Moments in our life that maybe in which we are truly, I don't know if you mean truly happy or truly enjoy or truly in flow. And is it what you try to find?
Exactly.
And decode and then when people become aware of that, it's going to give them kind of clues to find what is my purpose, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so technically, this is actually what I would call the way that most people are, if they ever thought about purpose, are trying to find it. And it's looking at your autobiography and finding patterns that are actually returning. So an exercise that I do with people is asking them to write down these flow experiences or questions like, yeah, suppose you would have, you know, you would have,
Something came up?
No, it's just that I lost your, well, wait a minute.
You're still there. I see you, or we hear you very well.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead. So you ask them to write down their flow experiences.
Yeah. And then actually you can get patterns out of that. And but that's just the first step. So that's not where I finish. It's actually where I start. And then, then the rest actually comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's already a good step. And then actually, most people, they already get some idea of the direction of their purpose. So, for instance, you know, people say, "Yeah, I'd like to connect. I'd like to. That's what I'm always doing. Or I'd like to include people when I'm doing something." And so we get to start the first clues by actually going into someone's autobiography. And it's the same thing actually with companies. Companies also have an autobiography. You know, they were founded in a way. They have a history. So you can get the same things with companies.
What are the questions you would ask to a company to unearth its purpose in this case? What are the questions you would? You said it's, I love it. Companies have an autobiography. So. What are you looking for in the history of the company that would give you a clue about its purpose?
Yeah, it's interesting. I want to always look for what started the company. Uh-huh. And like, for instance, companies just don't start for nothing. They start with a reason. And for instance, I've started my company. I've taken many initiatives in my life. And there was always what I was call a spark, and that sparked me to take a risk. Like if you start a company, you take a risk. You don't know whether it's going to succeed or when it's going to fail. But actually, there is a risk that you take there, and that's very interesting because that's actually leads to So why did you take that risk? And because in the end, as entrepreneur, we're a bit, you know, mad actually to do that, because, you know, it's much more rationally, it's much more safe just to stay where you are and not, you know, take that risk.
So you say the reason for the risk is probably the purpose?
That's a direction. That can be a direction for purpose.
But people can say, well, I just created my company because I wanted to be have more freedom, or I wanted to have more incomes, or that was what they like. For instance, over the last year during the pandemic, the number of company creation has increased a lot. And then when we ask people, why did you create your own business? Most of them say, well, I just wanted to be more autonomous. And more freedom is the big, it's not more money, it's big freedom, the big answer. So in that sense, it's not about the project, it's about their own lifestyle. How do you see that?
Well, I think there are two things. There are conditions. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, what I see out of that is that people need certain conditions actually to be more free or to be autonomous. But within the conditions that they might find something of a higher, where they can have a higher contribution, a contribution to the bigger thing, to the bigger world. But they would need first to have this condition to have autonomy or freedom.
Okay.
But I think there's always something behind.
Okay.
Because freedom in itself or autonomy in itself is not the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the means, just like self-organization, mm-hmm. as you know well, is not the goal itself. It's a means.
Mm. Interesting. As if we need autonomy to unleash purpose or meaning, or
I think definitely, and that's also why I'm combining. Actually, most of my clients, they are self-organizing or they're becoming self-organizing. I see actually autonomy and purpose, or yes, autonomy and self-organization are very important conditions to be purposeful. Because being purposeful draws very much on people who are intrinsically motivated. And if there's too much outer motivation or focus on the outside world, it will be very difficult. Focus on having fulfilling expectations to others. I mean, that is hindering the process.
It's interesting because most organizations are made of people who are employees,
mm-hmm.
and it's a challenge for them to evolve towards self-organization. Not often, it's not for the purpose. They do it for all kinds of reasons. They need to evolve to self-organization, maybe to be more agile, because they have business challenges to address, and they realize they have to change their ways of working. And as they do it, they realize that if people are more autonomous, if the organization is more decentralized, let's say, if we give more autonomy and empowerment, then we become more agile.
Yeah.
And there's a paradox because in the first place they were not designed to unleash people's purpose, but it's what's happening. It's like there's a connection between self-organization and inviting people to find their own purpose, because people who are self-driven will be able to carry a self-organization. While people who are not self-driven, who don't have their own purpose, maybe would be less able to carry on the autonomy that it takes to be self-organized. But at the same time, if they are more self-driven, they are less of an organization. Like the organization is kind of falling apart because everybody tends to follow their own thing. So if you're an organization, you need to kind of own the overall purpose of the company and still give space for everyone to have their own purpose. it's a big shift, isn't it? I'm just
it's
reacting to what
shift.
You're saying.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. That's interesting. And it's like, I like this because it's really becoming a conversation. Yeah, so I saw this in my career. And I think, you know, for me, it's always most clear if I can give my own experience examples. Like what you're describing is actually, so when I started out, my first idea was like, yeah, my skills and my skills are very important. So actually I started to get into things like getting things done and getting very good at my skills. That was a way for me to get some kind of autonomy or mastery. Then actually mastery was more important for me. Then actually autonomy became more important for me. And then I became also a manager, and I started to work in with self-managed and self-organized teams. And that actually was for me the next step in development, I would say. But still, the focus of like the first phase, like what I would call the getting things done phase, was more like, yeah, I'm great. You know, I can do it. I have the mastery. And I needed that because we all need that if we start to work. We need to kind of know that we can master the tools and we can get things done. Then the next step is actually, you know, that you have an autonomy, but you can also work with other people. So you find actually that you can take responsibility in a team and you can share this responsibility and work together with people. And a lot of people are actually now at this point, you know, at least where the markets that I see, you know, most companies are into agile, they're into self-organizations that I work with. You know, if they're still hierarchical, at least they have something like Scrum or Agile, right? Is that your experience?
Yeah, they are. It's often starting there. In my experience, many organizations are starting with a Scrum or Scrum or Agile in digital projects.
Yeah.
Because that's a methodology for that, and then they start to apply those principles into the rest or into other places in the organization that are not necessarily digital, and the how to do that is a big question for them, and there comes methods, holacracy, adaptive governance. This is our method, you know.
Of course,
my book. But the roadmap, there is no roadmap today. There is I think a roadmap for every company to find, and it's a big question. So this is my observation.
And so what I see, and this is a very interesting point in evolutionary development of organizations and teams, because I've been at this point for some time, and I'm now looking back a bit, and I'm actually starting to see the patterns in my own development. And what I see, what I needed at that point was to have facilitation skills. And when I was more in a hierarchical position and a manager and getting things done, I was mastering more workflow skills. But now I really needed to have facilitation skills with others. And I see this is actually the step where most Scrum and Lean teams are in. So they are really busy getting up to speed with facilitation skills. And of course, in that process, also becoming more autonomous. Now, what I see, if people get to that stage, which by itself is quite an achievement, huh? I've spent more than 10 years getting up to this stage. It's something that has a lot of practice, takes a lot of skill. But then once you master this stage, I find out there comes something new, something which you haven't seen before. And that's what I call the sense that you are feeling that, it's not about our team. We want to contributing something to the bigger whole, to the world, you know? If I would say in the agile teams, the idea is most of the time that we're great. We're working fine together. We're great. We're doing fine. And that's good. And that's quite an achievement. But actually, the next stage, what I would say is that, and I've read this somewhere, it was a nice phrase, like life is great. Like it's not only about your team. it's about something bigger that you want to contribute to. Like, you know, it's good that you have nice Friday afternoon parties and go on ski holiday together and have very nice teamwork and are in harmony with yourself. But if you look around you, you know, when you come back from a ski holiday, you know, things are happening in the world. People are starting to be see that they're living in a bubble and that this, that there is more to contribute to. And that's the next stage. And strangely enough, it sounds very idealistic, but it's also the next personal development stage.
Yes, thank you. There is a lot for me to unpack there. I think I'm really good in this conversation. So great. So I just unpack it and I let you react. So I try to reformulate what I understand. And you know, you help me, you help me progress in my understanding of what we're doing, because so you're saying that there is this evolution from us. If we map the evolution of individuals, and actually there are, if I think of Keegan, there are like a lot of researchers and sociologists and you know, specialized in human and people, adult development. So we can recognize those stages of development. There are patterns, right, in adult development. So you're saying from mastery to autonomy. And I just realized as you speak that if we want to move towards self-organized teams and self-organization, it requires that people do this shift from I can do it, I am the master, I own my job, I'm good at
exactly.
it. And or if we're a team, we are a great team. This is the same. To we are. I'm autonomous. I can take responsibility. So it's not about mastering the skill. It's about being able to own. It's something about being alone. It's something being independent. To be autonomous means I navigate the big ocean on my little boat, and I steer myself. I steer the boat of my life. I know I will. It's like I own the existence, and I own that I will. I'm alone, I will end alone. Because I own it, then I can be with you and I can collaborate. And maybe I'm going too far, but that's
No, related.
Autonomy means this capacity to be alone. I'm autonomous.
Exactly. And now the further you go, the further you come, what I call the land of paradoxes, which I love, but it's also a difficult land, because then to be autonomous by yourself means you're also better team member. You can better cooperate. In that sense, it's not like you are making yourself small. No, actually, by being completely yourself and being a bit egoistic, you can better help other people. You know, a lot of people think like, you know, I have to help somebody and forget themselves, but that's not the way to cooperate. As you know, in self-organizing teams, you should first know to take care of yourself and unpack your own tensions in order to help somebody else.
Yeah, take care of yourself, know your own limits, know what you can do and not
exactly.
do, and be able to ring the bell when something is wrong.
Exactly.
And if you want to take responsibility, that's you are trustworthy of responsibility if we know that you know your own limits. And because you can own your own limits and because you're okay to be alone, then you're worth taking responsibility. So if we want to, as a summary, if you want to move from a classic hierarchy to a more self-organized company, it means that the shift of culture, the what you need to educate or grow in people is the capacity to deal with that, to become autonomous, to own their own limits. And so that's something I see more now in this conversation that I never really saw before. And then you also say that so I can take responsibility because I know the limits, but also there are facilitation skills. Because it's not only I know my own limits, it's also I have my own objectives. I can hold and I can go there. I can go there alone. Because I can go there alone, I can take people with me to go there. I don't need someone to tell me. I can do. I am Keegan called about people who are how does he say? I can't find a word now, but it's Yeah, that's the idea. People who can follow their own objectives, they can manage that. But then there is also the facilitation skills. It's because if everybody goes on their own to their own direction, then there is no whole, there is no organization anymore.
Exactly. It all
falls apart. It becomes a network, and it's an organization is not a network, or maybe it's a network. I don't think it's a network because we are building something bigger together. So it's not that we're just interacting. We're also building an object. You worked for Orange. Orange is offering a service, a big service or many services to the market. And it's not just a network. It's actually, there is a structure and in order to deliver this thing. So you need to hold the structure together, and how you do that with people who are autonomous, meaning that they follow their own objective, it becomes tricky, right? I just say it again. Yeah. By the way, maybe it's interesting. I at Fabric, we are exactly in this place where we used to in our team, the consultants were employed. And we ended that, and all the consultants of Fabric are independent consultants on the market, and they are so the challenge for us is to own this paradox of being at the same time an organization that is as single purpose and that is single offer and a brand and a service that is consistent and coherent for the clients. So we offer it's in one project. It's not everybody has his own project. And at the same time, we have people who are completely autonomous, and even in the contract that they have with the company, they are independent. So we need to recreate, what is binding us together, what is holding us together,
exactly,
and how we exactly take care of that, and how we at the same time give space for everybody's purpose to unfold and express, and to hold a bigger purpose. It's an uncomfortable place to be. And there are exactly so many examples out there.
Exactly.
What do you think?
Yeah. No, it's fascinating what you're telling, because it means that you're in a transition place, basically what it means. Because you've come so far that you let go employership, and that's a big step actually to do. And you're now leaving the land of kind of where you were. But you haven't arrived yet in the next land. You're in between, actually, which is a very interesting place. And what it actually means is that you're on the brink of becoming more purpose-driven, more purpose-aligned, and going actually into the next stage where I would say inspiration, personal inspiration, and personal leadership becomes much more a driver within the structure. So the structure was actually quite important till now. And what you see is that the structure becomes it will not change probably, but structures then becomes more like structures that liberate instead of structures that actually have certain boundaries. And what you contribute to the whole becomes actually more of a driver for personal energy and inspiration.
I think that could apply for teams in organizations, in companies.
I think so too.
Can we create structures that become, that liberate, as you say, that enable people to express themselves?
Exactly. And now self-organization, of course, I did a lot of self-organization, and that starts also always with people experiencing the structures as limiting, as boundaries, as something that is sometimes even kind of, limiting them in a way. But that's only a temporal phase, I think. And some people stay in that phase, and that's also fine. I mean, there's a lot to be gained to have role clarity, as you know, and governance, you wrote a book about it. So there's a lot of things to be gained there. So it's incredibly important that teams go through that phase. But my journey, my quest is actually to see if there's something beyond that, something beyond going there. So much more that purpose becomes actually the way to make decisions, that structures are just there as necessary conditions, but not driving the organization.
OK. Can you say more about that? So you say a way to take decisions. You mean as a like almost as a tool or as a basis, a foundation for decision making? Is it what you're saying?
Yeah, actually, the way I look at decision making, which is basically, I think the most where development comes down to, development comes down to decision making in one way or another. And so if you're like in the first stage, like the mastery stage, your decision making is very much like you have your to-do list, that you check what your to-do list is and you check, you know, what you have to do today. Then in the next stage, your decision making is influenced by team processes. A scrum, a backlog, which is prioritized, so it becomes more advanced. Now, in the purpose stage, I would say decision making becomes even more subtle. You use the tools that you learned in the mastery stage and in the autonomy stage, but actually, purpose becomes a kind of a compass for decision making, and how that actually works in two ways. So one is you have your statement, like for instance, my statement is to spark purpose for companies. Now that means I'm not going to do I'm not going to give a language course in companies. You know, it's not my business. So even I'd like to, you know, my wife is Chinese. I'd like to give a Chinese language course, but I'm not going to do that because it's not in my purpose. So that's one way to actually get more aligned on, you know, that helps in decision making. But the other way is actually much more interesting and much more deep, I would say. What you tend to find in that stage is that you start to talk with parts of yourself, which can connect to a kind of inner wisdom or outer wisdom or whatever you get it from, but you start to talk to things or parts which have access to information that are actually beyond the ego, and I call those parts, you know, there are different ways to name them. Let's say I call it source or a trusted source. And actually, you can talk to those parts of yourself. You know, we all have self-talk, and we all sometimes experience that there is a higher self, that there is a self that actually knows more than your normal self. Now, you can actually consult those parts of yourself and actually ask them for guidance. And that's where the decision making becomes actually again to a next level, which is beyond autonomy, because autonomy is still something of an ego condition, something that the ego needs to get their needs met. But there's something beyond that. Like, for instance, when I write an article, I write weekly articles, and I used to kind of do a lot of research and do a lot of preparation and read a lot of things, and then I started to work very hard on drafting the article, and it cost me hours and hours to get the wording right, and then I had an article. Now nowadays I go for a walk in the park, and I look around and I see what inspires me, and nine of the times an idea comes into my head, and I don't know where it comes from, but it is often the right idea. It's the right, exactly the right thing to write about. So in that stage, you know, what I experience, and I'm also, that's also my inspiration to lead companies into that stage, is that things become much more subtle and much more, how to say, inspired. That inspiration is actually something that that actually works and very efficient, you know?
I love the idea of, we can just, I guess some listeners could say, hey, he goes in the park and he writes down whatever ideas he has in his article. So what is this article quality? I don't know if people here heard, I'm 100% with you. There is this potential in us that if you're connected to the right place in you, things flow.
Exactly.
Ideas flow. You're connected exactly. to some knowledge. I remember when we prepared this call, you talked to me about the wise man. Does it ring a bell, or is it me who dreamt?
Exactly, exactly. And this is yeah. actually a very
the wise
old,
man in you. Mm.
There's a very old tradition. So mm-hmm. Like Socrates, he had a wise man, and there's a lot of in the Western tradition, there are a lot of these examples. In the Eastern tradition, they have the ancestors. In African tradition, all tradition, they have these experiences. People call them guides. People call them sometimes God. People call them whatever. But it's a common human experience to talk to a wise part in yourself and to actually find guidance in that. And for me, it's very normal. You know, it's like, you know, for me, it's as normal as Googling an answer. Well, actually asking this part of myself is much more quicker than Googling, because if I Google, I get a lot of fake information and I want to get the real stuff. And if I ask my guide, I get the real stuff much more quickly. So it's not like, you know, the solution to everything, because I still use all my other tools. I still use the mastery tools. I still use the self-organization tools, but it's just an extra perspective that I put into the bowl, which actually gives me more information. And oftentimes it's very good information. Like when I write an article, actually most of the information comes from that source. And I do some research online, but most of the information comes from that source.
Mm. I think that's a very profound place. I love what you say, that it's, autonomy is still in the context of ego. My ego is autonomous, but there is a notion in what you're saying that if you ask for guidance, it means you are ready to obey to this
exactly.
guidance. You may realize that, what actually comes to me is not really what I want or what I like, but it seems to be it feels like the right thing, and I kind of have to surrender to that.
No. And that's one thing, but you know, and that's a caveat. So a lot of people who are, I'm not religious, by the way. So I'm Dutch, and most people here, if they hear religion, you know, they're a bit like septic. But a lot of people who are religious, they say, yeah, but that's it. I mean, I pray, and then God says something to me,
exactly.
and then I get an order, and then I do it. But that's not what I mean, because I would say that is a way, but that's not the path, you know, what I would propose. What I'm proposing actually is to have a partnership with your ego, with the other parts. Like you've got your life experience, you've got your ego, which is actually the part which part of you which makes that you get things done and get your needs met and get your identity. You know, without an identity, without getting our needs met, we're nowhere. So you shouldn't lose that. It's very important.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
So my son is now 14 years old, and I'm actually stimulating him to build his ego, to get his self-confidence. He needs that in the world. But the other part of you, which I would call, you know, let's call it trusted source. That's actually in partnership. So if you've got something from your trusted source, you always check it with your ego. You know, does it meet my needs? You know, I'm not going to do something which actually, suppose my trusted source says to me, well, Marco, you should now sell your house and live in Africa. No, I'm not going to do that. That's my ego speaking, of course, because I've got a wife and family here, and I cannot afford that. So I'm not going to do that. So it's not like a religious force.
You think your trusted source would tell you that in the first place?
You know, there are people's trusted sources that are, you know, are giving them directions. And it's not a strange example, because I know, you know, in the previous generation, people of my family, they were missionaries, and they were, you know, they went to Africa, actually. They devoted their life to that.
But is it not because how do you recognize that? This is the you know, what is the radio channel? Hey, this is radio channel trusted source. You should do this. Hey, this is radio channel ego. Listen to me carefully. And then you're not a pilot like deciding where to tune. So what you call trusted source, you know, it's not something that you can like scientifically recognize. It's more like a personal experience of existence. So I'm curious how you find this, and many spiritual tradition, by the way, are all about that. And also psychology is somehow about that, finding a place of, this inner space. There was a podcast with Salim Ibrahim. He speaks about that. He speaks about family constellations and inner dialogue. There was a podcast also with Atalwin Pilon. He's a Zen master and with the 100 Days Warrior, also a Dutch guy. And he speaks also about that that place in you. How do you?
Yeah, good question. Good question. Actually, I have a list of about 12 criteria I go through, well, even longer, that I go through actually to determine whether it actually was a trusted source that you were speaking with. Because a lot of times, and you're very correct to say that analogy, which I and that metaphor, which I use a lot, it's like a radio channel, or it's like a Wi-Fi channel. And what happens with these radio channels, sometimes there is a lot of interference, sometimes like with the sound, there's a lot of noise. Now, that noise comes from the ego. So what I do specifically with people who I'm teaching this process is we take down and let them write down what they heard, which is one of the connection techniques. And then we look at the material and we actually apply the criteria on the material. And we can actually, within half an hour, we can actually select what is trusted source material and what is ego material. And as you do that, you start to distinguish it much, much clearer. Like, for instance, trusted source always speaks, if it's something from trusted source, there is some kind of emotion stirring in you. It is not something, it doesn't leave you neutral most of the time. It's something, we all have that. I mean, if you have an insight, suppose you're stuck and you go for a walk and then you have an insight, that insight goes together with a feeling in your body. It's not like that you're neutral. I mean, when I get an insight, I'm always very happy. I'm like, wow, this is kind of a present I get because I was stuck and now I've got an insight and now I can go along. It's like, that's also combined with a bodily experience. That's one criteria which I apply, which is very, you can measure it. You can actually see if there is a bodily sensation when you get this this information. The other thing is about the nature of what it tells you. It's trusted sources are like a strategist. They don't care about the nitty gritty. They are the voices who are only interested in, the big picture stuff. So they won't tell you they're not interested in the small things. So these are two examples of criteria where you start to filter, what is this voice and what is the ego voices. So you start to distinguish it.
How do you find out this list of criteria? What did you do it yourself, or do you?
No. There's a whole community of coaches who have developed that. I've just plugged into that community.
How is it called, this community? If someone is interested.
The True Purpose community.
True Purpose community. Okay.
And it's
where can we find that?
It's truepurpose.net, I think. True Purpose Institute. So True Purpose Institute. If you Google True Purpose Institute, you can find it.
Wonderful.
And it's a community of change makers. So I think it's very interesting for your audience.
Yeah.
Global change makers. And it's set up by a guy named Tim Kelly. He's got an interesting background side because he's a math doctor from MIT, So it's not at all in the kind of woo-woo space, very scientifically. He was also captain of a naval ship. So interesting kind of...
This is the guy who wrote a book. Didn't he wrote a book about his experience in the Navy? True Purpose, yeah. It's
True
kind
Purpose,
of famous.
That's called the book. Yeah, okay.
That's the relation is there. All right. Okay. So what you're saying is that as we grow in maturity, from the mastery to the team through the purpose-driven state.
Exactly.
Where
exactly.
It becomes something that you actually, through inner, through a listening to your inner, some inner voice that is your inner self the request for guidance and the learning to distinguish where it comes from, so it's from a place that you call true purpose, that would help you. So it's more a place in you than a sentence.
Exactly.
That's what you said at the beginning. It's not you put words, the words are helping, but that's more place in you, right? It's more like like a source. You say the word, use the word source.
Trusted source, yeah.
So it's actually
about two things. One is for decision making, it helps to have a articulated statement, which like the statement is which I have. So it's kind of a direction. The other thing is, and that's what I would call a compass. So if you're sailing a boat, you need a direction. You know, I'm heading northwest, so that's your direction. But you also need a compass, and that compass tells you where you are at that moment. That's what I would call this voice, connecting to these voices.
Mm.
That's connecting to your trusted source. That's your compass. But the purpose, the statement, like for instance, I want to, our purpose is to transform organizations from, let's say, ego-led to purpose-led. I'm just saying something. That is purpose. That's the direction. But you need both things.
You need both things. So what you're saying reminds me something we have always known in the human history. Like people say, oh, I had this gut feeling or this intuition, I should do it. And it was something that I just felt was so important. Or I decided not to take this plane and it happened that this plane crashed. Or I had this gut feeling. Is it that?
Yeah. That's one of the criteria that it all works together. So if you're talking to a trusted source, your gut feeling will actually say that is a trusted source.
Mm.
And it can also translate into that. But it's one of the criteria to establish whether it's really a trusted source.
How do you steward your... This is a lot about the inner landscape. Like it means that like looking inwards becomes like part of your daily life. Because it's like you make so many distinctions about the inner landscape. How you feel? Is it the ego? Is it? It's like a full conversation in there. So it means that you need to consider the world not just as out there, but also in there, inside,
yeah.
in your. In your own story, right? And how you take care of that? You meditate, or you say you walk in the park, or what is your routine for yourself to be the good steward of yourself, so it doesn't become overwhelming? You're not just inside; you're outside and inside at the same time, in a balanced way.
Yeah, and the interesting is that you know, as I've progressed upon this path, I started to work less and relax more, mm-hmm. and actually getting more impact wow. at the same time. And it does take a number of routines, but like for instance, when I get up, the first thing I do is write a long writing or by hand, I write a page full. And that's actually, I download, you know, my own consciousness. And that actually most often is the agenda for my day. And that takes me about 15 minutes. So I write one page.
You write sentences. You don't write like bullet points, because I also do my agenda for the day with bullet points. But that's not what you're talking about, I think, is it?
You could also do that. But I feel that long handwriting is a bit more, I don't stop. You know, I don't stop.
So it's
I
like just, journaling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I just I just go till the page stops, and then I stop.
Wow.
And so it flows actually, and there comes a lot of information on this page, and it's very easy to do. Anybody can do it. It's very easy to do. It takes me 15
that's a
minutes.
Great practice.
And actually, you're unloading your unconsciousness, your unconscious mind, mm-hmm. with that, because I think a lot of this stage, what I'm talking about, is about working with your unconsciousness. You know, the consciousness is about mastery and autonomy, but the unconsciousness is more about these kind of things.
As if the trusty source is also a part of allowing your unconscious or your subconscious to kind of express or like enhancing your conscious mind with dimensions which were used to be unconscious, but have kind of some wisdom in them. And because you expand your consciousness, you kind of become aware of those information, those signals that are out there, but they were there before, you were just blind to them.
It's there all along. It's just actually, I think most of the potential, you know, with also within organizations and societies, I mean, if you know a bit about Jung, he wrote a lot about that, the collective unconsciousness. I think, you know, if you were to transform as a species, we cannot do that consciously. We have to actually evolve our unconsciousness together. And that's how transformation will evolve. Because our conscious mind is just active for like 5% of the time, and most of the things we do unconsciously.
In the integral philosophy, there's a lot of people in there, and there is one philosopher that, tonight I forget all my words and my names, but I will say it in a future podcast maybe. He says that the purpose, or what we can call purpose, in like a company purpose or an organization purpose or a person's purpose, is the expression of evolution. It's on the edge of evolution. It's like if you really, when you're actually looking for it and trying to express it in the real, in reality, by doing, you know, by doing things that are trying to implement this purpose, making it happen, you actually, like, it's like the it's the edge of the wave of evolution. That is the consciousness, the evolution of consciousness that is actually happening in real world, in reality, and trying to make this purpose happen is your participation in making in evolution of consciousness. And I think it's I don't know, for me it speaks to me. It speaks to me. It's interesting because it's also a way to say, look, guy, when you try to follow what is really true for you, or as a company you're training to make it impactful in a sense that it is consciously impactful, you're participating for a little share, for your share.
Exactly.
And but you will not, you know, you will not save the world. It's not about saving the world, and it's not about being idealistic. It's just being making your share. So you're part of this. You're contributing to this big wave of, you may be just one drop of water, and that drop of water is needed to be the wave. But you're not the wave. You're just the current. You brought by the current there. So you allow it to happen, and your job is to allow it and to maybe be the, I love the idea of instrumentality. You would be, you be the instrument that you are as a person or as an organization to do your part, just to be that drop of water or that little pack of water on this big wave that is the evolution of consciousness.
Yeah,
and that's in a bit, the real world.
And that's a bit frustrating for me because, you know, when I started to think about it, like, you know, I'd like to have impact and I'd like to do things and mm-hmm. see actually there is a cause relationship with what I do. My ego wants to see that. But actually, when I start to think about it, this is my hypothesis. I haven't, but what I think is happening actually, that what I'm doing is actually changing something in the unconsciousness of people and also of collectives that will actually appear in another way, maybe even in another generation. That is not a direct, mm-hmm. that I will not see the direct relationship mm-hmm. between what I do, but there is some kind of relationship. You see what I'm getting at?
It's like what you're saying is like, I believe that if I follow this trusted source or this source, what I do, I let go of seeing the, there is a notion of belief and faith in that, because faith is believing what I'm doing is going to have an impact even if I don't know.
Exactly.
So that is faith. So you have the faith that I don't own the outcome. It doesn't belong to me. The outcome doesn't belong to me. It belongs to something bigger than me, but my responsibility to do what I have to do. And I'm hands off. So, if you think of karma, it's a bit that too, right? It's like you do a good thing and then your hands off to, you're not doing it for the
reason. Exactly.
You're doing it because it's the right thing.
And I'm doing it anyway. Even if I know I'm not seeing the direct result, I'm doing it anyway because I feel I have to do it.
So the big conversation, because I want to stay in the field of in the world of organizations, which is the theme of this podcast, because we can apply that. We can apply everything we're saying 100% to organizations. So
definitely. That's also my field.
It's also your field, 100%. So we just bring them in the conversation. We're saying that as an organization, like I'm a leader of an organization, or maybe a leader of a division in an organization or a department. How can I translate that? Like, because that's complicated. How can I be, you know, listening to the trusted source of my department? Does it even make sense, this question? And how can I, you know, on one hand, do what I have to do, but in a way that it doesn't, it's like a contribution to the whole. And I don't.
Well, yeah, that's a good. I'm
responsible for the outcome as well. It's
a cool
place to be. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's also, you can also build a business case around it if you want to take it to that terms. Now, it's very clear, and everybody knows that inspiration works. So inspired people, they perform better at all levels. They are more energized. They get more done. They are more creative than uninspired people, right?
Right. No. I'm with you. Everybody listening is with you. Okay, we're all with you.
Okay, so then the only question is, how do you get people to be inspired? You know, and the biggest form of inspiration is not inspiration, you know, by listening to something outside of yourself. You know, that's part of inspiration. I also need that inspiration sometimes, but you get even more inspired by listening to what comes from your source. Because that's actually what I would call, true inspiration. That is something, you know, where the word inspiration comes from, from Greek. It means that something is some kind of energy is by the gods is put into you.
Is the breath?
The breath. Exactly. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
The breath breath is that comes into you. That's your energy, and most powerful energy is your source energy.
I would like to ask you a question for regarding organizations. That's because the conversation we're having, and I'm very much with you, is basically saying, well, look, purpose is there. It's inside of you. It's a place in you. You can connect to it, and then you can express it in the world.
Exactly.
I cannot relate to that very well as a person. As an organization, I can relate to it kind of through maybe the creative impulse at the beginning of creation of the company, and it's expressed in the organization. I can kind of relate to that. Now, the way we many work on purpose today, and I find it makes sense, is to ask the opposite question. And that is to ask, all right, so how there is the world? So out there is our ecosystem. I'm a company, I am in an ecosystem of stakeholders. I have clients, I have shareholders, I have employees, I have the government, the society, maybe the living systems around me. So these are my stakeholders. How can I create a positive impact on these stakeholders? How can I create value? How can I be someone or a company that makes a difference, not just for my shareholders, but for all the other stakeholders at the same time? And that's there. And the expression of this value, this unique value that they have, that is based on what they have a, of course, they have they are a field of business, they have a specialty. So they have a product or they have a service that is very, they spe- that is specific. They explore how to bring this product or service into, you know, having a positive impact for the world. And that's their rationale to think of their purpose. And I think it makes some sense. So it's not thinking of, oh, what coming from me, what is, you know, what is my source, like my, what I really feel is the right thing. It's more, what is needed? What is the request out there? What is the world asking? And how can I be an aware organization that is actually not just looking in one direction, but looking in, you know, in 360 direction and having a positive, you know, being a positive presence, being generative. It's, I think it makes sense too. So I'm curious to have your idea.
Yeah. So basically I distinguish kind of three ways of finding your purpose. Mm-hmm. The first is what I would call the indirect way. And that sounds a bit like what you are discussing. So you get people together, you get a few very good questions, like what you mentioned, like mm-hmm. how can we contribute to the world? And then you start to brainstorm. And then you get, you know, okay purpose statements. And I've done those purpose statements in the past with companies as a marketing consultant. Then there's the second way of getting a purpose statement. And that is very seldom happens, but that's when, like, for instance, the founder gets an epiphany, something that he thinks of suddenly. But that doesn't happen often. So actually, this is not a practical way. Now, the third way that you get it to a purpose statement, and that's what I would call the direct way, is to ask the trusted sources of the people assembled who are doing the purpose discovery. Now, what I normally do, I get the people of the team or the people of the organization together. Sometimes I invite the stakeholders also, if they want. You know, everybody's invited. And we go through this process and we just ask their trusted sources. Sometimes they can connect to a trusted source of a company, whatever. And we got a lot of material and I've got a process to kind of sort that out without it becoming a compromise. And so that's the third way. So the first way is what was called indirect. It's like, you know, like if you're an historian, you have your indirect sources, that's people who wrote about some event that happened. Yeah. Then you have direct, which actually you can talk to the persons, you can talk directly to the source, you can talk directly to, like an historian talks directly to somebody who was in the war and not read about it in a book, who wrote about the war. So is it making sense?
It makes sense. And then it leads me to a question, which is an organization's purpose the compilation of or the combination of everybody's trusted sources? Meaning when someone is leaving, if we replace the people, say tomorrow, all these people are gone, in 10 years, they're all gone and new people are in this organization. And it's still the same organization, but with different people, but they are different people. So they would have a different, a source. So if we do the exercise, there will be a different outcome, but it's not possible because that's the same organization. Yeah. So for me, there is a big question. And that's the question is regarding the purpose of organization is this pre-existing, I apologize for the audience, this sounds like a crazy question, but is the purpose something that is pre-existing somewhere and that you can tap into, like the founder would like channel something, they would channel something that is out there that is the purpose of this organization? It's a weird way to say it, it's a word I'm using, maybe there isn't better words. Or is it, okay, we are a group of people here, let's create an organization and it's just an outcome of ourselves here, but it's dependent on the people who are actually, you know, creating it in the very moment. So if you, is the organization the group of people who are actually in the organization? And some tend to say, well, it is, there's nothing else. And some others say, no, there is something else that is the purpose of the organization and the others are here. The people who come are actually, they are invited to actually serve it, because it's aligned with their own purpose. It's serving that big purpose is a way to express their own purpose. It's actually a way to, you know, to express themselves. And I think it's a very, very profound question.
Definitely.
And I've heard two schools in that, and I lean towards the idea that it's the first option. I'm curious to have your idea.
Yeah, I think how I look at it is that it's end end. If you are, so it's not either or.
Mm-hmm.
You are the organization. The organization is in you. So you're part of the organization. So you're part of the whole, but the whole is also part of you. So the organization is in you and you are part of the organization. And if I bring people together, and I've done that now a number of times, it always ends up to an inspired purpose. More inspired than in the indirect method, which I always do with people. I always start with the indirect method, also with organizations. And then I guide them through the direct. So they have a choice. I mean, you know, but the direct method is always much more inspirational. And now to your question, yeah, is that coming from, where is that coming from? Yeah, I think it's both. I think there is some kind of channeling going through some people, but there is also, it's also the people themselves which are present. Am I being clear?
There is this someone I'd like to interview one day. Jean-François Nouvel is really someone who influenced me a lot in collective intelligence. He's a great thinker,
mm-hmm.
and I would say a master, really. He says that the role of a founder is to channel this purpose that is pre-existing and to bring it to, mm-hmm. in reality. Because maybe who he is made to channel that purpose that wants to be expressed. And you can recognize... It could be that the founder recognizes another person who has the same, you know, is plugged on the same radio channel, is tuning yeah. to the same radio channel. So those people would actually fund this company together, which is basically what happened to me with my associate AXA. I wanted to create something and I recognized that he had the same call. So what really drove me to build the company, to start it with him and to share, was that yes, I knew we could work very well together, but mostly that we were listening to the same music. We were about the same project. And we recognized, like what he was saying, said, like, yeah, that's the same thing. What I want to do is the same thing. So let's join forces, right?
Yeah.
And it works. So now when a new person comes, can this person, I stay with my idea. Nouvel said that over time, there's a group of people in the organization that is growing, but you recognize intuitive personae. That's what he says, that person is also, you know, tuned on the purpose. So this group would expand over time. And it's important, he says it's important to recognize that these people exist. Now, I have seen this happening in groups, especially in a Christian world, where it created a hierarchy among people, like, oh, he's one that recognizes the purpose or not this one. And that creates a separation among people that is not good. So it's a big question, how to on one hand protect the purpose,
yeah,
and on the other hand include everyone. And everyone also absolutely has a contribution to make every voice make sense. It makes sense. It is positive and contributed to hear every voice, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going too far.
No, but I think it's very interesting. I've done it with, for instance, one leader who was founder, but in the process, he was very pleased that it was not only on his shoulders. He was very pleased to have others in the process of also tuning into this information and getting the information. And I think that allowed him in that process to be more freely about, you know, tuning into that information for himself. Because I think also for a leader, it can be quite daunting. Like, yeah, I only have this information and that brings on a big responsibility onto my shoulders. Mm-hmm. But what I found out is that the process of doing that is very important, and that you're doing that together as a group, and it's you're bringing in your all the things, and then something happens, and one way or another, it always turns out like yes. I don't know how it happens, you know. That's about, you know, phase. I've done this process now a number of times, and there's always a result where everybody's inspired, but I don't know how it happens, actually. I don't have an answer how it happens. I don't know. Mm. It's just there. I'm there, and sometimes I think, wow, I didn't do that. I was just a spectator, actually.
I think it's amazing to find this balance where everybody can be included and recognizing the differences. There's a differentiation.
There is.
You want to be inclusive, but you don't want to be in sameness.
That's
the risk with inclusion. It becomes sameness. So we now assume that everybody has the same say, and something is wrong with that because it's not right. I'm not saying for deciding the rules or for splitting the money. I'm talking about purpose. Defining what is the purpose and listening to the source. Yeah. Not everybody has this connection with the source of the company the same way. Not the latest person who just come with know nothing and the one that has been founding the company. And that differentiation is very difficult to articulate because you're bringing in the notion of there's a notion of hierarchy in there somehow. And it's a very difficult thing for many to, when you start to be in a collective, to appreciate those different. So it can be normal, but it can also be painful. And it's also difficult for a founder and to stepping in, or for a leader, a manager or a leader. I have a client is a big leader of a large organization, stepping in, stepping out. So when do I step in? But when do I don't step in? And it's those balance. This balance is difficult to find in self-organization. It's very simple in hierarchical organization. You just expect the boss to step in all the time. But when you are purpose-centric and self-organized, there is still a necessity to step in for the leader or for the founder at some point, because there is this holding this connection with the source, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's responsible for that.
Exactly. And that's what also the edge that I'm exploring now. So I know there are some people who have done some more work in that, like Peter Koenig. I don't know if you heard of him.
I've heard of him, Peter Koenig, yes.
He calls the source is actually the founder, the initiator of a company. And it's very much related to what I'm talking to about. Now, what I really recognize in what you're saying is, you know, there is a big notion that everybody should be equal and nobody is more than the other. But when it comes for information, there are people who have more information than others.
Exactly.
But it's not the same as hierarchy. You know, I can have more information than you and still, you know, I'm not your boss. So
exactly.
It's like, you know, what I tell somebody in a self-organization team, roles take decisions, but people have information, and that's quite a distinction. Mm. Because roles, you know, they're part of the organizational structure, and they have the authority to take decisions. But that doesn't mean they have all the information. I could imagine that if there is some people in the company who have a better connection to their source than others, you know. It's very good to consult those people, but they are not necessarily the people who have to take the decisions. Am I making sense?
Makes a lot of sense. So so which leads to the next question is, how do you recognize these people? What is the process to recognize these people? How the organization, not the people, but how the organization itself recognizes these people. So it's not about humans. It's structural.
You mean the people who are connected to a source?
You say people have the information. Some people have more information than others. Some naturally are closer to the source. I really relate to that. I see that very well. They're not necessarily those who take decision, but they have a connection to the source.
Yeah.
So so how would you acknowledge that in a way that and everybody feeling okay about it, and still you want to use it because this is amazing to have those people, but you want to so you maybe it's it, it can it. It It could be just natural, and there's no need to put any words about it. Or maybe there is a need to kind of
well
it, make it, it official.
It helps to make it explicit.
Yeah, it
so it helps to share your source.
Yeah.
Actually, to share where you have the information from, and then you can also make it less of a mystery or less of a personal thing. So that's one thing. The other thing is that. There are people who have this information on all levels, like, and those are what I would call what people who take the initiative. You have them on all levels, like you're inspired to start a company, but you have people who are working for you who are inspired to do their part of the roles or to lead their circle. So that's what I would call. Peter Koenig calls that sub-sources or sub, initiators.
Okay.
And that means that's where it starts all over again. Like, for instance, I wrote the book Getting Started with Holacracy, and I think I was the source for that book. It was my idea. I got the idea to do it, and I took the initiative. But the guy who invented Holacracy, I am in his field.
Brian.
So I'm just in his field, but within a certain field, and I think we're always somewhere in a field, but within that field, I can be the initiator of something. I can be the center of something, and people can around me. And now we're talking about that. Mm-hmm. The more I think about it, the more I think that is the essence of leadership. That's the holy grail of leadership that, that we're looking for, because I sometimes had doubts whether I was a leader or whether I consider myself a leader, because I'm, kind of an introvert guy and, always like, the last to say something in a group. But there are definitely a lot of instances in my life that I took the initiative and I was actually a leader, sometimes in somebody else's field. Sometimes I created my own field. And I think this is the kind of leadership that you want to have. Within self-organizing organization, that people actually, structure is fine, but that's for me the next level. And that level has to do with being comfortable with following something of some higher information that you get, and actually having the safety and having also the ability to act on that or to share it.
So what you're saying is I recognize I'm in a broader field, and there is a source in this field, and I acknowledge that in this field maybe I have less information about this field than that person who is the source or those people who are the source, but I create my own field in this field, like a Holland, and which can attract people, and it can be something. It's a Yeah, and I can also recognize that I am the source of that sub purpose or something that you call it, but in itself it has all the complexity and the possibilities than
and it's very important that you take authorship
you need to do both. You need to do own that, but also recognize that. You are not the source for the other level.
No.
And I think the more you can acknowledge you're not the source for the other, that place, the notion of place, I don't know, speaks to me a lot. Being in the right place, in a system, people are in the right. If you're in the right place, then there is energy and there is flow.
Yeah. And you see, the terminology here is still a bit vague. We're still finding the language to speak about
exactly.
These things.
Yeah,
and that's what I find in self-organization. It can be very clear, but the higher you get up, the the more vague the language becomes.
Look, my friend, this is a great conversation. I'm having a great time and I love exploring this question with you. It could be a very long, there is so much more to say, but I think we can end for now. I would like to end by asking you what I love to ask to our guests, which is, why not 1 minute, 2 minutes of you being alone with our audience and sharing what you want to share? Like I usually say, it could be a minute of silence. It could be anything that comes to your mind. It could be something that comes from your source.
Okay. And
speaking to our sources, right? So I'm gonna just remove my headset. So I see you, but I don't hear you. And that's you. It's a moment of intimacy between you and the people listening to us. So are you ready?
Okay,
good. So see you in a minute.
Yes, as I'm thinking about it, I feel very grateful to have this space to share. I'm very inspired to do this work. And I actually think that organizations are the most impactful entities that we have, and that in the next years or in the next decades, the transformation of organizations is really paramount to dealing with all the challenges in the world. Now, one thing that actually is really triggering me is this, the idea of a being good ancestor. Like I'm from Holland, and we're very proud to have the first multinational in the world. And then if we look into history, that multinational was actually involved in slave trade. So, were that good ancestors or not? Now, what I would like is that if next generation look back on our generation, you and me, as we are working here, as we are living here, can we actually be good ancestors? Can we actually put things in motion now that future generations will say, wow, those guys in 2022, they had it tough, they had a challenge, they had conditions, but they did it anyway. And that's actually a thought that I find at the moment very, very inspiring. And that's actually one of the motivations for my work and my life. Well, that's about it. Thank you.
Marco, thank you very much for having been with us today. It was really a pleasure. We have opened many doors. There is this field of the field of inside, the inner field. The world is this reality is not just out there. Outside, it's also inside, and it's inside in the individuals and in the collective. And that's unknown territory, and we are in the phase of humanity where we are trying to understand it and mapping it. And it's still we are very poor with our language, but you are actually quite advanced. And thank you, because you bring so much distinctions. You have been reflecting and you have been there a lot with yourself and with others, and it shows a lot. It shows, and it really is helpful. So thank you for sharing your wisdom and your presence. I don't know if there is one last thing you want to say before we close.
No, I really, when we started, it was really a very nice discovery. So actually, the more, I'm now always, I used to think I know a lot, but actually I think the more I know, I do not know things. And that's actually what I also discovered in this conversation. So being in the space of not knowing with you is actually very thrilling. So thank you for that.
I really enjoyed this conversation. So really thank you. I'm looking forward to continuing next time. So we end here. So everyone, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I hope it helps you, it inspires you wherever you are in your organization, in your life. So I invite you, let's take a simple piece of, I don't like the word advice, a gift or proposition that you can, we can use from Marco, is to journal, write down, in the morning, I keep this idea of writing down what is in your mind, what you want to do in the day, and let yourself write with a pen and a paper and take some moment with you in the morning. That's a very nice, very beautiful practice. Maybe it's an invitation I make to our audience. And then thank you for listening and all the best. You see you or listen while we speak in our next episode. Thank you and goodbye.